Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is Episode 8, A Drug by Any Other Name.
Hi, welcome to Color Country Politics. I'm Jenny Hendricks. I'm here with Jesse Harris. And we have a wonderful guest today. I'm so excited. We've got Sergeant David Evans from the Cedar City Police Department. And our topic today is opioids in Iron County. We're just going to jump in and get started. We'll ask you just a few questions, and then if there's anything that you want us to know, you just take the lead.
Okay?
Thanks so much for coming out. Let's first talk about what are opioids. So when people talk about opioids, what does that mean?
We're generally talking about two forms, synthetic opioids, pharmaceutical opioids. In Utah, we have pretty consistently struggled with pharmaceutical abuse. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of a long-standing struggle with us. One of the discouraging parts for us is that generally or often begins pretty innocently.
Yeah.
A young person is in a vehicle crash, or a young person is mm-hmm. in an athletic event and gets injured. They are required or need medical attention. Post-surgery, during surgery, they begin to, you know, to be given the opioid, whatever that might be. The challenging thing, and the thing that scares us the most, is the science tells us that within a few days to 5 days, the body has already began to develop some tolerance to that drug.
Wow.
And because of how powerful opiates are and how they affect the body, that tolerance unfortunately crosses the road into dependency in a hurry.
Wow.
And if we're not really cautious and careful about the way the pharmaceuticals are being administered, then we that person could quickly and very innocently be on the track to dependency. With all the efforts and all of the work that has been done to try to overcome opiate abuse in Utah, at some point the doctors no longer will prescribe and administer the pharmaceutical.
Okay.
The sad thing for that person, that patient who began, you know, that medical treatment, you know, like we said, very innocently, mm-hmm. their body has already, in some cases, long developed the tolerance and the dependency to that drug, and when they don't have it, it is horribly painful.
Wow.
And so they then begin to seek to get the opiates through other ways, and then you transition into the street narcotics, the heroin and things like that, and then the problem continues, mm-hmm. and that person is on a long path to recovery.
The statistics that I have seen seem to lead us to a place, just like you're saying, where, you know, people think sometimes of drug addicts, or, you know, or heroin addicts or opiate addicts as something other than your next door neighbor. You know, it's a dirty thing, it's a street thing, but everything that I'm reading says that it often is a neighbor or a friend or a family member, somebody that you know. It started out innocently, but now they do have a real addiction, a real issue.
Yeah, it's very true. There's no boundaries. This drug has no boundaries. It doesn't care who you are, your background, education, socioeconomic status. It will grab you and it will take over your life in a hurry.
Wow. What is the situation in specific to Iron County? What are we dealing with here locally?
The heroin issue has grown. I would tell you that the pharmaceutical issue, as far as pharmaceutical opiates, is still kind of where we're struggling. I think there could be a lot of reasons for that. It's prescribed by a doctor, and so sometimes, mentally we feel like, well, the doctor's giving that to us, and I'm not in any way throwing shade at a doctor.
Sure.
I appreciate their work, and but it just, like you use the word dirty, it's very easy when you don't feel right.
Yeah.
The doctor prescribes the med to you. It's very easy for you to take it.
Well, we trust our physicians.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. And so the pharmaceutical problem is still going to continue to be an issue. There have been some things that have happened in the last few years that, in my opinion, has maybe added to some of those discouraging times and the overdose issues. A few years ago, there was a law that passed that reduced drug penalties in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And what the design of that, I think, is good. However, the resources, the treatment facilities, the money, that didn't come the way that we needed to in the beginning. And we were not able to get drug offenders to be sentenced to prison. Drug offenders were released, and then those problems continued.
So you're talking
in some ways increased
state law.
Yeah.
That kind of pushed the responsibility to the counties, which I've always been a fan of handling the problem, you know, as close to the people as possible.
Sure.
But the law was passed without any funding.
Correct.
So in Iron County now, we're faced with things that we have to deal with legally, but maybe without the proper resources to be able to do that.
I am for treatment. I think that's got to be part of the solution, and I want that to occur. If we don't have the beds, and if
yeah.
we don't have the resources and the drug abuse counselors to help,
right.
then we're not creating an environment for those addicts to be successful. I'm for it. I just feel like we need the backbone and the structure and
yeah.
all of those things in place before we go ahead and
you need to have something to, you got to have a stick along with the carrot.
Correct. Kinda.
And it's really easy to say, this is what we need to do, and it's very hard to say, here's how we're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And there was, and again, I don't in any way want to speak negatively of our government. There was some talk about money and resources. We just didn't get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, the idea I think is good and genuine and
uh-huh.
and helpful. I just think that, you know, like maybe we put the cart before the horse.
Yeah. So as a community, you know, given that we are where we are, what do we need to be aware of? What can we do to sort of help ourselves, I guess?
Yeah. I appreciate that question a lot. And I think personal responsibility is a really big thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, when that person has been put on that path, whether it be innocent or whether they chose to begin using opiates for whatever reason that might be, we need to help them.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you, and I'll be a little bit defensive, maybe, of the police department. I have never let anyone out of jail. I don't get to set bail. I don't get to sentence them. We don't get to do any of those parts.
Yeah.
And so we get to be the investigative arm,
mm-hmm.
And file the charge. And then we need the courts, and we need adult probation and parole if they get involved. We need all the parts of the law enforcement section to work, and then outside of that those webs got to be a little stronger.
Mm-hmm.
The medical industry, the,
mm-hmm.
the doctors, and the physicians, I think, should be a part of that
mm-hmm.
solution. And then if we can get all of those pieces together, including the individual person,
yeah.
you be personally mm-hmm. responsible for the struggles that you're having.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think when all of those pieces work together, then we start to see some healing.
Sure.
But if you were to knock off one of those arms and fracture the relationship or one of those pieces were not present,
mm-hmm.
then I don't think that we really help like we could.
Okay.
So
It sounds like being aware of the dangers, too, can help everyone be a little more aware for themselves and those around them of, hey, you know, you just got a prescription for Vicodin. I'm gonna keep an eye on you and make sure I help you if it looks like it's getting too out of control. You know, something that we can individually do to jump in. Knowing that it's a danger, you know, I've had them prescribed to me before, and I look at them scared, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go like a day and a half and then see if I can stop, because I know how quickly that can snowball.
So that's, you know, speaking to the personal responsibility, I think that we all need to know and be educated. We trust our doctors, and I think that that's good. But what is this potentially going to do to me?
Right.
What are these oxys? How am I going to respond? All of the potential dangers. And then, you know, we're almost to 2019. I just think that we cannot ignore the dangers of what the drugs do. They work.
Yeah.
Opiates work.
Yeah.
And they're designed to block the pain, mm-hmm. and they do. Mm-hmm. None of us want to feel pain, and so it creates quite a difficult dynamic. And the doctor-patient relationship, but personally responsibility, I think, is a good place to start.
I read an article several days ago that talked about pills being laced with fentanyl, mm-hmm. and that had happened to a group of young people who, you know, were at a party and they were good kids and they never done drugs before, and someone said, hey, why don't you try this? They didn't know what it was, and two of them died that night, and they were 19 years old. Is that something that is happening in Iron County? Is that something that isn't as big of an issue here? You know, back in my day, we didn't have that issue. We had other issues, but you went to a party and if you were offered drugs, it wasn't going to kill you that night, you know?
Yeah.
Are you seeing that here in Iron County?
Not much.
Good. Okay.
Occasionally, we deal with a drug overdose involving fentanyl. It is so dangerous. Really, like some small granules of fentanyl are lethal. A couple years ago, we had a young guy that was really pretty reckless and dangerous, and mm-hmm. thank goodness that we were able to take care of that problem. And he was ordering fentanyl from China using bitcoins, and it's fairly, you know, easy to do. And
wow.
Thank goodness we haven't had a huge issue with fentanyl. Okay. Scares the daylights out of us.
I'll bet. How much of that do you guys pick up on just going up and down I-15 versus what you deal with our own community members?
For the Cedar City Police Department, it kind of spills over in our community from the larger communities around us. Mm-hmm. Denver to the north, LA, Vegas, and along with that I-15 corridor, the Highway Patrol, the DEA, are much more present with large-scale loads like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to tell you every day, but several times a week, those guys are taking off big loads. And it's not... not necessarily large loads of fentanyl. I'm talking about a variety of drugs.
Okay.
Methamphetamine is still a problem. Mm-hmm. Even though we don't have the lab type situations mm-hmm. like we used to, it's still being moved. Marijuana, some cocaine.
Wow.
Yeah, if you look at the police blotters, you can just see the charges, like 75% of them are drug related.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So many times they arrest her for someone out of state.
Yeah, many times they are. And I-15 runs right through the heart of our community.
Yeah.
And it's going to spill over into our community.
Right.
We're in a great place to live. There's some bigger populations and bigger places around us,
yeah.
and those problems come here sometimes.
Yeah. Let me kind of switch gears just a little bit. We were talking earlier about Prop 2, and we've had some guests on talking about Prop 2 and you know, what the potential impacts are. As everybody knows, Prop 2 passed, so we're dealing with marijuana now. But there was also a compromise that we were talking about, you know, with the legislature, and I think that's going to be in effect probably sometime next week, week after.
I believe it's the first or the third.
Okay.
I think the third. The third is Monday. I think it's the first day you hold the session.
There you go. Yes.
So, you know, looking forward, what is that going to have an impact? What do we need to be aware of there?
Yeah, I think it will. Our argument has always been that the THC, as long as it's going to be allowed, the THC is the psychoactive property that causes the head change. And the head change is the thing that worries us, and the judgment, impaired judgment, and driving, and just every day, how you interact with your children. Are you going to be safe at work? You know, and there are probably lots of different things that could kind of come in and mitigate that, whether they could test positive at work, how much would they be allowed to, where's the threshold?
Right.
There's a lot of things. Right off the bat, that's the thing that's always been our concern. Mm-hmm. There is I want to say 112 cannabinoids somewhere near there. I might be way off. Somebody's going to check, cross-check.
It's a large number either way. Slice
this podcast. Somebody said, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Somewhere near 112 or something like that. They've identified cannabidiol, and most of the time it's referred to as CBD, as having some legitimate medical benefits.
Sure.
And I think that that's good. That's a good medicine. And if that helps, then I'm for it. And I think generally in law enforcement, we would be for that. The THC bothers us. It just kind of scares. What's going to happen? We don't know either. I mean, we're kind of sitting by wondering what this is all going to look like. Yeah.
Certainly Schedule 1 doesn't help because there's not very much research that can be done to find out how does this work.
Yeah. And our federal government has labeled that a Schedule 1 narcotic. And so,
tell me about what is a Schedule 1 narcotic?
They're based on genuine medical purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And the feds still have labeled marijuana as a Schedule 1 narcotic.
Okay.
So, and then it kind of moves on through 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Marijuana is still labeled a Schedule 1 narcotic. Which means, according to them, it has no medical benefits.
Okay.
So.
Okay. You know, during the debate leading up to that ballot proposition passing, a lot of the arguments that I saw had to do with the legalization of marijuana versus opioids, and the argument was sort of presented like if you legalize marijuana, it's going to cause the opioid crisis to decline because it was sort of an either or choice. Do you see that as people would choose one over the other, or is it a gateway? You know, does one lead to the other? What is your experience with that?
I'll tell you that this, my next comments are probably going to generate some energy. I have had the opportunity in 17 years of interviewing, I'll tell you, thousands of drug addicts.
Wow.
I don't know how many, but thousands of them. In 17 years, if I really thought back and went back to research all of those cases, I might find, I'll bet less than 3 human beings who did not progress through their drug path and did not start with marijuana.
Wow,
I know it frustrates people for law enforcement to label it a gateway drug, and I don't want to discourage them or frustrate them. And you asked for my experience, that is my experience.
Wow.
What would you attribute that to? Is it just ease of availability, low cost?
Some of that is ease of availability. Some of it potentially was peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it... I don't know.
Why would anybody?
Yeah. Why would anybody
want to get
involved in drug use? But
they do.
But they do. So, ma'am, that has been then my the number would okay. be, and I might not even be able to find three.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing, because that was a really prevalent argument.
So marijuana does the, you know, when you talk about opiates, marijuana makes you high.
Yeah.
When THC is present, you know, the cannabidiol is a different issue, but when THC is present, it makes you high.
Uh-huh.
You develop the same tolerance, the same type of physiological changes inside of your body mm-hmm. occur, not to the degree when you're taking an opiate,
right.
but they still occur, and over time your body craves mm-hmm. that feeling. It just mm-hmm. that's just the way the body works.
Mm-hmm. I think you know, from what I have read and you know, talk to people, it's not just the physical, but it's a psychological addiction. And maybe I just made that term up, but there's you know, people want to escape. People want to, you know, just chill. People want to just not care for a minute, mm-hmm. and so you develop that psychological sort of aspect to it as well.
Yeah, I would buy that. I think in a lot of cases, life is hard sometimes,
right.
And maybe there's some a lack of coping skills,
yeah.
and people often turn to those ways to, like you said, to escape and forget about it.
You can see the same things happening with alcohol addiction too.
Yes,
you know, people find yeah. they find something that makes them, you know, not think about what their problems are, and
yes,
it can snowball very, very rapidly.
Yeah.
Interestingly, on the point of would medical marijuana lower opioid deaths, that hasn't seemed to be the case in Colorado.
Right.
Over the last 4 years, I mean, they've had recreational use. You know, mm-hmm. you can get it for whatever. Their opioid deaths are still increasing there. So it doesn't seem to be a direct correlation, at least there. And I think I saw a few other states where they had collected a few years of statistics and saw, yeah, opioid deaths are still going up. So it's hard to tell whether marijuana does become a replacement, if it's just that it's not being prescribed properly. It's hard to tell. There's so little data available. But
interesting.
I think some of that does come back to the problem of there's very little research because of the federal restrictions that are in place.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, speaking just to our community in general, what are some things that we should know? What are some things that we should do? What are some things that we should be aware of? From your experience, you know, this obviously is an issue here. It's something that we are dealing with. What are your thoughts on that? What do you have to tell the community?
I assure everybody, the two of you and everybody who might hear this and everybody that I get to interact with, we are not going to back down. The police, we're just not going to go away. Unfortunately, we have had to put a lot of young people in bags and body bags and investigate those overdoses. And it is as there's no more serious offense that maybe some more serious offenses that we could take into consideration. But we're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And so.
What a devastating thing to put a young person in a body bag.
It is.
I can't even imagine.
Those dynamics are, they hurt everybody.
Wow.
The family, and it hurts me, I'll tell
yeah.
you. It hurts to have to do those things. So what to do? We're going to keep doing what we're going to do, or what all that we can. I just want the other parts who are involved to do all they can, and then we need to get, you know, we've talked about education, we need to get our community to really understand what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we have this great city, we live in a beautiful part of our world,
yeah.
you know, all the seasons that come and go, and we really are fortunate, but we have big problems,
mm-hmm.
specifically with this drug.
Mm-hmm.
And if we, for any amount of time, continue to think that it's not a problem, or that members of our community believe that it's not, unfortunately for me, I'm going to keep burying them.
Wow.
and picking up those dead bodies because of the problem. So everybody from the governor's office, the legislature, the courts, adult probation, parole, me and my job, and then you and your families. Mm-hmm. Be hypersensitive of what the drug can do. You cannot, when you introduce that opiate into your body, you cannot stop or slow down what it's about to do to you.
Wow.
And when you really, I think when we really know physiologically mm-hmm. what it can do, maybe that'll help the patient or the mom and dad or whoever's involved, or maybe be a little more guarded and aware of the potential problems.
Great advice.
The answer, ma'am, that would be my answer, but I wish I had a magic wand
yeah.
or some special trick or something to do, but it's going to take
a lot
of work. Everybody's
yeah.
got to jump yeah. in the water with us.
That's great. That's good yeah. information. Well, do you have anything else that you want to share with us?
No, I appreciate okay. the opportunity that you let me come and talk to you for a few minutes. I appreciate what you're doing to try to get the message out. I hope that it sounded or came across the right way, that we're not going anywhere. we're going to continue to work to serve and to do our best to protect our community, and I hope that came across in a professional way. We'll do what we can do, and we just need everybody else to kind of take part in it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We
thank
really
you.
Appreciate your time.
Yes, ma'am.
And we're so grateful for what you do and all of your colleagues. It's amazing, and we're very grateful. Thank you for coming on.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.